ॐ भद्रं करने पश्यम्याम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः शिरैरङ्गैः स्तुष्ट्वापुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृत्तश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः One of the verses that starts with the Eva Maya Parinoditatma.
Well, that's 147.
Page 147 in your book. It's a. Do you have it?
No.
Can I see it? It starts with. It's the Eva Maya. Go to your thing, Dave. I can get it for you. The bottom. The very last one. Okay. I'll be referring to the previous verse. We'll start with this. The Eva Maya Parimohitatma. Sa eva maya parimohitatma shariramastaya karoti sarvam shariramastaya karoti sarvam shriyanapanari vichitra bhogaihi shriyanapanari vichitra bhogaihi sa eva jagrat paritriptameti sa eva jagrat paritriptameti saha Eva Maya Parimohita Atma Shariram Ashtaya Karoti Sarvam Shri Anna Pana Adi Vichitra Bhogaihi Saha Eva Jagrat Paritriptim Eti. Okay. We're going into a particular prakriya here. Remember this term prakriya? It means the teaching methodologies of prakriya. Swami says there's several different prakriyas. Strict Drisha Viveka, seer seeing differentiation, is one that's often used. But maybe the two, we usually, in fact, when we're starting teaching initially we'll usually use this seer seeing differentiation in order to differentiate the self from everything you can objectify. But another type of drisha seer seeing differentiation is called the avastha traya sakshi or the avastha traya prakriya. Avastha is a state of experience. Traya means the three states of experience. So the prakriya, which differentiates the teaching methodology that differentiates the sakshi, the witness, from the waking, dream, and deep sleep. These are the three avasthas. Right? So when we look at the states of experience that we go through in a 24-hour period, everything can be put into these three states, the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. And there are situations like, for instance, coma would be similar to the deep sleep state. Daydreaming would be similar to the dream state. And the waking state, what we mean by the waking state, are those states of experience where we're perceiving through our sense organs, we're associated with the sense organs. When the experience doesn't involve the physical sense organs to make us experience this particular loka, this particular world, but yet we're still experiencing something, that would be dream state. Similar to dream state, categorized under dream state. Any state of experience, whether deep sleep or a coma or being knocked out, where you're not experiencing any form of duality, but just pure, we say pure ajnanam. Yes. I don't know anything, state, where there's no subject-object relationship. That falls under the sushupti, the deep sleep state. Now why this is such a powerful teaching methodology that's really directed to make you recognize your own being, is that notice that in the drik drisha, seer seeing differentiation, we're just doing that within this loka, within the waking state. And when I do the seer seeing, I'm differentiating the sakshi, conscious, the conscious being, from everything that I perceive. And even here in the waking state, I'm recognizing as I'm doing that the invariable presence in all of my experience. That's what that's all about, is to recognize the invariable presence of my being, no matter what the experience may be, no matter what type of vritti, thought modification is there, no matter what type of sensory perception is there, no matter what type of objectification is there, there's always present in all of those different states of experience in the waking state, I am always there. I am always there as the invariable. So, for a samsari, that invariable, usually the differentiation of that invariable usually stops like with a physical body. In all of the experiences in this world, I am here, this jiva, this physical body, I am here experiencing it. So from my standpoint, I'm the constant. In all of my experience, I'm the constant. I'm the one who's having the experience. And so that constant usually stops at the body-mind-sense complex, what they would call the Karyakarana-Sangata. That's just a term, so that you have that term. But once we go into further analysis of the subject-object differentiation, it's true that my body and sense organs are here as I experience the world, but it's also true that my physical body and sense organs themselves are being experienced. Right? And so what happens is we push the envelope of the subject-object relationship farther than a person normally would. Normally, that subject-object relationship stops at the body. But once we realize that the body itself is an object of knowledge, right, I push the envelope inward. When I realize, well, the physical body is known through the sense organs, now again, the sense organs become the subject to the body, which is objectified. But then when I objectify the sense organs and I realize they also are known, I'm again pushing the envelope inward. Now the mind that objectifies the sense organs becomes the subject, and the sense organs become the object. And then you keep going, because the mind also can be objectified. Objectified means I'm aware of it. I can watch it. I watch it come and go. I watch it change. I'm the invariable. I'm the invariable presence to this to which this objectified mind is known. And so as I go more and more and more to that invariable, always it's an invariable presence, me. It's just that I keep objectifying what I have thought to be the invariable presence. Yeah? And as I objectify those things, the invariable presence of myself, it sheds those qualities. In other words, if I objectify my mind and the mind is changing and coming and going, and I'm the invariable presence, the me, the self that's objectifying that, I no longer have those qualities. Those qualities come and go. I'm still there. So this is actually a very powerful teaching methodology, because it takes your mind step by step by step to recognizing your presence differentiated from these things that can now be objectified. And so, in fact, internally, there should be the recognition of, in a sense, two experiences. One is the invariable presence of my being, and the other is maya, is the mitya, is all of the different sensations and perceptions that come and go, that change. So I need to recognize both. There's the constancy of me, and there's everything else. And the constancy of me, in the end, is not something objectifiable. If it were objectifiable, it wouldn't be me anymore. Right? Because I'm the invariable presence that is there present to this objectified, experience. and the objectified experiences are all bound by change. Okay, now this is a powerful, this Drisha Viveka, it's a very powerful teaching methodology that when you do it, say if you're teaching, you have to make sure, I mean, hopefully you're taking the students along with you, step by step by step, so a student actually has to see this in terms of your own experience, or it's just some hypothetical. It's not meant to be a hypothetical. It's meant to be something that you're actually experiencing as the unfoldment goes on. That's why we say that Vedanta is a pramana, it's a means of knowledge. It uses prakriyas, it uses teaching methodologies, right, to help you, to help the student see. Yeah? And so in fact, when the teacher is unfolding, that the teacher should also be seeing exactly what he or she is unfolding, right? I mean, if you're not seeing it as you unfold it, then there's a problem there. You have to, the words that you're using have to also be clarifying that bringing that vision, you know, to manifestation, so to speak. Well, while you're doing it, that's part of the teaching methodology. Well, this one that Swamiji, quote, talks about as being so important, along with another one I'll talk about in a minute, this Avastatraya Sakshi, is an extension of the Drisha Viveka, because now I not only recognize myself as the invariable, non-objectifiable subject in terms of this world that we call the waking state. This world, it's called the waking state because the waking state is the world that I experience through the use of my sense organs. That's how it's defined. And so when I do the seer seeing, I'm using the waking state as my launch pad, so to speak, for that differentiation. But once we recognize that invariable self that is there in the waking state, then we can look at these three states of experience, the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state, all of which belong to me. Right? I can say, I am the waker, I am the one who is experiencing this waking state. And then I can say that I, the one who is the waker, experiencing the waking state, I am the dreamer, the one who experiences the dream state. So I can say I had a dream last night, and this is what it was. And when I'm having a dream, I'm very aware of the dream. It's my dream. I wake up and I can describe the whole dream, and I'm aware of the dream as it's going on. So the one who was the waker is now the dreamer. And then I have a third state that we call the deep sleep state, where at that time there is no subject-object differentiation. There's no running commentary going on. But it's still my state. Because when I wake up, I'll say, I had a really good sleep last night. Excellent sleep. Sound sleep. It was so peaceful, I didn't know anything. Nothing was going on. I was totally conked out. And you can describe that state. You would yourself say, I had a great state, deep sleep, very sound sleep. You could say, and I had a dream also. Right before I woke up, I had a dream. You can describe the dream. So the one who is the waker is the one who is the dreamer, is the one who is the deep sleeper. Nobody has a problem with this. We don't make an issue out of it. We don't go around telling people, you know, I'm the waker and I'm the dreamer and I'm the deep sleeper. We don't have to talk about it. We understand that. Okay? But upon analysis, it becomes very interesting because the experience of the waker, the waker and the waking world, means this body, mind, sense organs in this waking world, is negated and replaced by the dream experience. In other words, in the waking state, I can have this body, I have this body, and this set of experiences. In the dream state, I have take on another world with another body or no body, you know? Which is different and other than this world. Right? But the one who is the waker is the one who is the dreamer. But the dream world negates the waking world, and the dream character that I'm identified negates the waking character. In other words, when the one is, the other isn't. That's one way to say it. When the dream world is, the waking world is not. In terms of my experience, my subjective experience. Subjective experience is important, because if you can be without a subjective experience, that subjective experience is not innate to you, because you can actually be completely without it and still be. That's very profound, because what is truly you, your being, you can't just be without. You can't go out of your experience, because it is you. If it's not intrinsically you, then it can come and go, you know. It can come and go in you, it can remain illumined by you, and go away, and there's no harm to you. But you haven't gone away. That's the thing. If there's anything in your experience that can go away, does go away, it simply is not you. In the sense that it can be Maya, it can be Mitya, it itself can depend on you for its being, but you don't depend on it at all, because you can be without it. You are, and this is gone. And so in the waking state is negated by the dream state. The dream state and waking state are both negated by the deep sleep state. Even in the deep sleep state, there is no knower known. You know, there's no subject object in the deep sleep state. In the waking state and the dream state, as long as you have a body and you're relating to the waking world or the dream world, there's subject-object differentiation, there's chatter, there's duality. You know? But in the deep sleep state, there isn't. So there's this logic that's applied for this particular prakriya, this avastatrai sakshi, the witness of the three states of experience, is the name of this prakriya. There's a logic that's applied here. It's called anvaya vyatireka, right? The anvaya is the positive correlation, positive relationship, and it goes like this. When this is, that is. That's the anvaya. It's a positive correlation. When this thing is, then this thing is. So if this is, this must be. When this is. Positive. The vyatireka is a negative correlation. When this is not, that is not. So if you have this relationship between two seeming things, it's a relationship of mutual dependence. One cannot be without the other. When this is, that is. When this is not, that's not. Right? So this depends upon that for it to be. One simple example they use is for the anvaya, for the positive correlation, when the sun is, the day is. When the sun is not, when the sun is set, for instance, the day is not. You can't have day without the sun. The day is totally 100% dependent upon the sun. So when the day is, when the sun is, the day is. When the sun is not, the day is not. There's a relationship there. What if it was like this? When the sun is, the day is. When the sun is not, the day still is. What if that's how it was? Then what would you say? You'd say, well, the day doesn't have any relationship to the sun. The two might coexist together sometimes, the day is, the sun is. But they don't. They need not. Because if the sun goes away, the day still is. So that would not, if that were the situation, then you'd say these two are not dependent on each other. Right? Because the one survives the other. Right? And so now, say in terms of this particular teaching methodology, this prakriya, if I say like this, when the waking state is, the self is. Right? When the waking state is, the self is. When the waking state is not, means I would, instead of saying it like that, I'll say when the dream state is, because the dream state displaces the waking state. So first I say when the waking state is, the self is. When the dream state is, then can I say the self is not? If I could say the self is not, then the nature of the self is dependent upon the waking state. Mm-hmm. But if I can say the waking state is, the self is, the dream state is, the self still is. See what I mean? And then I go, the deep sleep state is, which negates both the waking and the dream state. The deep sleep state is, the self still is. So what we see is what we call an anvaya vitireka. When the one is, yeah, there is. That's the anvaya. When the waking state is, the self is. Two positives. Okay? Then you can say, oh, well, does that mean that your self is dependent upon the waking state? This world, this body, is it dependent on this to be? You say, not really, because when the dream state is, I still am. And in the dream state, there is no experience of the physical world. Right? So then you can say, oh, well, I'm not dependent on the physical world, but am I dependent upon the subtle world to be? Is the self dependent on the subtle world? Because I can be without the waking state. Can I be without the dream state? You know, so the dream state is, the self still is. But then, in the deep sleep state, which displaces both waking and dream, the self still is. Now that's huge. The self still is, when the deep sleep state is, means that the self is intrinsically not a knower. Right, look at the deep sleep state. The self still is. But when the deep sleep state is there, there's no experience of duality. There's no experience of the waking state or the waker or the physical body. There's no experience of the sense organs or the perception of the sense organs. There's no experience of the mind or the imaginings of the mind. Right? Those are gone. There's no experience of the ahankara, the I notion. There's nobody in deep sleep saying, oh, I'm dreaming, isn't this wonderful? If you're saying that, then there's the mind is awake and the knower is there, right? The ahankara is there. Nothing like that is there. Because everything that is required for the subject-object relationship is an unmanifest condition. It's part of the maya. You know, you can see, I mean, if you have a dream and the whole duality comes, it comes from the unmanifest in the dream, it comes from the unmanifest to the manifest, just thinking about a dream or an imagination, all of the duality that's able to be experienced requires that manifestation of a creation and a dream character within the creation. Or just as Ishwara, the manifestation of that duality, for it to be known. What about when that duality is not manifest? Right, like say, your imagination, the imagination is not manifest. When the imagination is not manifest, neither is it known as Ishwara's form, nor is there any subject-object relationship within that from in terms of knower known on the part of the jiva. So all of this duality that we experience as Ishwara's experience of the whole and the subject-object relationships within it, like me knowing you, all of that belongs to the manifestation of either the waking state or the dream state, you know, but not the deep sleep state, not the unmanifest condition, right? And from that unmanifest condition, we wake up again, the same me, right? Means the same duality that goes into my personal duality, my personal prarabdha, let me put it that way. When I wake up in the morning, I wake up to the same thing that I went to sleep to, right? So this waking dream, deep sleep, waking dream, deep sleep is the cycle that every human being goes through. But the question is, there's an anvaya, there's a running presence of me. And who is that? Who is the one that continues to be there in all three states of experience? And what are the experiences that are negated? And the negation is much more, the negation is much more thorough than we imagine just when we do the drik drisha. When you go from the drik drisha, the seer seeing differentiation, to the waking dream deep sleep differentiation, there's a recognition, you know, there's a recognition of my freedom from duality, a manifest duality. That's the type of recognition. And then if we look at, so this is what these are what these verses are dealing with now, these next three verses. So now when we kind of look at it, do this viveka, if we start understanding this viveka, then you can go to certain experiences, like for instance, when you have a dream, you know, say you're lost in a nice, strong, lucid dream, just to make it a really, really good dream. One that's real, you know. When you wake up from that dream, obviously that dream world and the dream character and the whole duality of the dream, the whole manifestation of the dream, is gone. What has happened to you, to your being, to the one that was totally identified with the character in the dream? What happens to you when the character and the dream are gone, destroyed, over? How is that transition of manifest dream to unmanifest affected your being?
Yes.
There is no effect whatsoever. There's no effect. Nothing happens. I mean, you can, from the standpoint of your mind, you can say, oh, that was such a good dream, darn it, you know. Mm-hmm. You might miss the experiences you were having, but that's not what I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking what happened to your being, the me, the self. And the answer is, you know, nothing. Nothing at all. And that's the fact of it. That's the fact of who you are. Nothing ever happens to you in any way, because you are not part of the objectification. Right? The objectification is Maya. You may the body, mind, sense organs within the Maya objectification of this whole creation may say, like you may say, your body, mind, sense organs, here your mind is talking, this is me, this is who I am. I am this. You know? And this is subject to death, and I am different from you. It will talk like that and totally mean it. You know? But that's part of the inherent ignorance of being part of this projection. You know? It's an innate beginningless ignorance that causes that, because in fact, this is the truth of it, your body, mind, sense organs, right? The truth of it is the self. It's just like the wave saying in the ocean, the wave saying, I am the water. Honestly, I am the water. It's like me saying, I am me. I really am me. It's absolutely true, but in reality it's true, because there is nothing but me.
Mm-hmm.
But I say, from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, I am me. I am the self. And that's true, but what this mind doesn't know is that that is absolutely true, but it's also true that this me, the self, is free of it. So the beauty here is, say, for instance, in the dream character says, I am the self. And that is true, because the whole dream is nothing but the self in terms of the water of the ocean. The conscious being is the very truth of the whole dream. And so, but the character, this dream character, has the capacity, because it has a mind, to say, I am the self. But it doesn't have the knowledge to be able to say, and I am free of this whole dream. I'm not only the self, it would end up saying, you know, I am the self, the mind, the truth of the mind is the self, but the self is free of the mind. You know? And that self that is the self of the mind is the self of the whole. It is the self of the whole, and it is free from the whole. That part it doesn't know. And so now with these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies, we have to educate the mind, you know, to make it recognize this. So that it can still enjoy saying, I am the self, but it'll always also be able to say, and I am free of the mind. Right? The self is dependent on the mind, and the mind is dependent on the self, but I am free of it. That's the viveka. And so we have to do these prakriyas, these methodologies, to make us see that truth, to recognize the constant amidst the changing, which is me. Yeah? Once it's recognized, it's there to be recognized. You know, it's not a hypothetical. It's something to it's an experience to differentiate. It's a reality that needs to be differentiated so that I can recognize, oh, that's true, that I never change, I never will change, I never can change. There's not a thing I can do about it. I am the constant in all experience. That's what I have to see. And so here in this verse, he's starting to talk about this now. He says, Saha Eva. Saha means the jiva. That jiva, indeed, Mayam Parimohita Atma. Here Atma is mind, whose mind is Parimohita, completely deluded by Maya. Right. So indeed that jiva whose mind is completely deluded by Maya, shariram astaya, having assumed the body. Shariram means body. Astaya is the past, indefinable past participle, means having taken recourse to means having identified with the body. That jiva means the atma with the jnanam, right? Okay. That one is the one who karoti sarvam, who does everything. Right? It's this jiva whose mind is totally deluded by Maya, having identified with the body, he does everything. Right? You can even say that Atma indeed, whose mind is totally but without Maya, the Atma, you have to understand is the Atma, the self has no problem. Right? This Atma is not deluded. Right? The Atma is not deluded by Maya. To be deluded by Maya, you have to have the Jiva Upadhi. Right? So just think about it like this. If you are Brahman, you are the Atma, that's who you are. The Jiva is the Atma. Right? There's no Jiva. There's no second thing there to be the Atma and the Jiva. So you are the self, and your self is infinite. Now you, this wonderful infinite self that has no problem whatsoever, in fact there's nothing but you, also has this incredible Maya, right? Which is intrinsic in the self. It's like an apparent quality, in that it can't bring about any change to the self, but then, you know, it's not apart from the self either. It just doesn't have any separate being. So this Maya manifests as, say for you, say if we're looking at for you, it manifests as an infinite, we'll just do it like this. It manifests as an infinite creation. And from the standpoint of that manifestation of the whole, there is no ignorance. If from my mind, if I have a manifestation of if I imagine, for instance, a meadow, or I imagine the seashore, or I imagine a beautiful setting, whatever it may be, that imagination totally comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. It is a manifestation of my being, right, in the form of a meadow. So now say I have a manifestation of my being in the form of the infinite universe. No problem. There's no ajnanam there at all. If I ask you to have a manifestation to manifest a meadow, to imagine a meadow, okay, you don't have to think, oh, this meadow is mitya, and I'm free, you know. and nothing's harming me when I imagine the meadow. I don't have to think like that. It's just how it is. It's the reality, right? And so what if I'm Ishwara, that infinite creation manifests, right? That is infinite knowledge, manifest knowledge. There's no ajnanam there. It's just the glory of Maya, we can say. But within the creation, part of that manifestation, within the creation, there are an infinite number of jivas. Those jivas are within that creation, and they are in fact bound by that Maya. There's a built-in ignorance. What is Maya, the glory of Maya for Ishwara, is ajnan for the jiva. Because the jiva is as a physical body with an indwelling mind and sense organs that are looking out. And so, even though for Ishwara there's no problem, I am the whole, the jiva, because of the inbuilt ajnanam, because of the situation of the Maya, can't know that. All it experiences is that I am the conscious being, which it is. It is the conscious being, right? That's the truth of it. And so it says, I am the conscious being. Of course I am. I'm a conscious being. Oops, I'm also subject to death and subject to change and different from you and all kinds, subject to all kinds of calamities and all this. Mm-hmm. So that's the anyonya adyasa. That's the huge problem there. So what has to happen is that with teaching, the tremendous clarity that has to take place here is that this jiva has to recognize that its body, mind, sense organs, everything about it, the ahankar, absolutely everything, is part and parcel of the whole manifestation of Ishwara. That it's just one in the warp and woof of Ishwara. It's one aspect, right? And so looking around for a jiva mukta, looking around, you see this body, mind, sense organs as part of a complex whole that we call Ishwara. And you recognize that the conscious being that you are is in fact free of this body, mind, sense organs, and it is really not bound in any way, and is in fact the one self of the entire manifestation of the infinite universe. Yeah? That's the... so that you can say, I am the whole. Yeah? And so now, to get back, from the standpoint of Brahman, of the self, there is no delusion. From the standpoint of Ishwara, there's no delusion. Okay? So this, when this says that, you could say that self alone, you know, whose mind is deluded by Maya. So you have to know what you're talking about. You have to, that, so you won't say self. You'd say that jiva. In the next verse, it does that jiva, whose mind is totally is deluded, completely. Parimohita means completely deluded on all sides. There's not even a peephole that isn't deluded. Because now think about it. If you have an imagination, and in the imagination is a character, where is the peephole? Where is the Archimedean point, you know, where you can step outside of the creation to say, oh, look, I'm really the whole. Right? All of your sense organs and the mind, which is related to the sense organs, are totally part of the creation. So all of your means of knowledge, and you are the self, but all of your means of knowledge are locked into the subject-object relationship of the creation. So that one who is totally deluded by Maya, having taken refuge in this body, you know, using this physical body, it's that one who does everything. And then he says, Shri means women, anna, food, pana, drink, etc., vichitra bhogaihi, by all of these variety of enjoyments, women, food, you know, women just mean sex. So we can say women or men, whatever it is. So women, food, drink, etc., these variety. Vichitra means multifaceted, many different types of enjoyment. Okay, that jiva alone enjoys the satisfaction, happiness through these enjoyments, jagrat, in the waking state. That jiva who is in the waking state goes to satisfaction, and of course that includes its opposite, goes to satisfaction and also goes to pain through these bhogas. Bhogas are enjoyments, right? Things that can be enjoyed. So the jiva being totally deluded, right, by maya, having taken this body, right, abiding in this body, that is the one who does everything. And that one, in the waking state, attains these enjoyments through the objects of enjoyment, such as women, food, and drink, etc. Now he goes to the deep sleep, and to the waking state, dream state, and he goes, Swapne sajiva sukhatukha bhokta, Swapne sajiva sukhatukha bhokta, Swamayaya kalpita vishwaloke, Swamayaya kalpita vishwaloke, Sushupti kale sakale viline, Sushupti kale sakale viline, Tamo bhibhuta sukarupameti, Tamo bhibhuta sukarupameti. Now he says, and in swapne, I'll do this on you, swapne, saha, jivaha, sukha, dukha, bhokta, swamayaya, kalpita, vishwaloke, sushupti kale, sakale, viline, tamas, abhibhutaha, sukarupam, eti. He says that in the dream, swapne, in the dream, saha jivaha, that jiva, sukha, dukha, bhokta, is an enjoyer of sukha and dukkha, pleasure and pain. That jiva enjoys pleasure and pain, experiences pleasure and pain. Swamayaya kalpita vishwaloke, in a world, right, in a world which is projected by his own maya, or her own maya, swamaya. By your own maya, in the dream state, you become an enjoyer, an experiencer of pleasure and pain, in this world, which is projected by your own mind. And then, as we've just discussed, right, you project a world, you become your little Ishwara. That's why I often talk about this. You're your own little Ishwara in the dream. You have your own maya, because all of this is maya. So of course you have some, right? Because the whole thing is maya. And you have a subtle upadhi. You know, and so you have what we call the ten matras, the subtle elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, the subtle aspect. And, you know, you have, there's sattva, rajas, and tamas, you have the ability to project that. So you're your little Ishwara. When you project it and you take a form in that, then you become the enjoyer of sukha and dukkha within this creation that your subjective projection, your subjective creation. So you're the little Ishwara of that. And you project it, and then you enjoy the form that you take is subject to the same ajnanam, you know, because being part, and so that those little jivas, your subjective little jivas, you know, experience the creation and the pleasure and pain within the creation. Okay, so that's in the dream, and then he says, sushupti kale. And then, at the time of deep sleep, sushupti, at the time of deep sleep, sakale, everything, the whole, dimene, goes into unmanifest. It disappears. Dimene means goes into unmanifest condition. The whole dream disappears, right, at the time of deep sleep. So, at the time of sushupti kala, kala means time, so sushupti kala, at the time of deep sleep, sakale viline, when everything goes into unmanifest condition, then tamo abhibhutaha, that jiva, being overwhelmed by tamas, by ajnanam, I've been overwhelmed, totally overpowered by ajnana, then what? Swarupa meti, he goes to a state of sukha, pleasure. Why? Because it's the ananda swarupa of the self. Right? There's no, just think about it. In deep sleep, somebody once called it, you know, it's like the lazy man's samadhi. You know, you just go to sleep, and even though your mind is not awake and absorbed in the self, it still is in unmanifest condition. It's a very different state, right? Because in deep sleep, the mind goes into its causal condition, which is unmanifest maya. From the standpoint of the jiva, that's just pure ignorance. It's an unmanifest maya.
Also, it's not non-dual.
Well, it's non-dual in a sense, but it's only non-dual because maya has no separate being of its own. But the maya itself, which you're all just maya, all of this is just maya. So all of this goes into its unmanifest condition. You know, so there's no experience of duality at all. Right? So there's just you, unimpeded or unhampered, you know, by the pains of duality.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why deep sleep is so pleasurable. You know, it's just you're abiding, that and the alarm clock goes off and you want to put it off or just have a few more minutes in the ananda of unencumbered me. That's why we say, when sometimes now when Swamiji talks about, what do they mean by the self as ananda? And sometimes ananda, instead of ananda, we say anantam, limitless. So that's because yourself, when it's totally unencumbered, in other words, there's nothing competing with it. There's no other experience competing with it. It is just limitless me. That's the ananda. The very nature of the limitless nature of myself is ananda. There's nothing hampering it in any way. Whereas from the standpoint of the body, the mind, the universe, in terms of as a jiva, there's a lot of things hampering it. There's the pain in the body. There's the emotional pain in the mind. There's stress. There's turmoil, there's agitation, there's anger, there's all kinds of emotions that are that I'm identifying with. You know, but say none of those are there, none of those impediments are there at all, and I'm just me, just simply me without any of that. That's the ananda. That's what we mean by ananda. And so when the mind, of course, becomes very quiet and none of those impediments are there, you know, my agitations or my hurts or my anything disturbing me, I feel great. You know, because there's no competition and I'm just there. I'm the one that's there without any competition. It's an unimpeded meanness. That's all. You know, I'm not even talking about bliss or anything. It's just ananda, the unimpeded sense of me. You know, unencumbered in any way. You know, that's the limitlessness of the self. You know, the unhampered nature of the self. It's the ananda. You know. So, in fact, all is well with me is the baseline. That's what the mind and everything keeps coming back to, you know, is the sense of self in which everything is well. But we get taken on these nightmarish rides, you know, the state of the body, the state of the mind, the state of the complexes, all of these things that, you know, take us on very, very painful rides. Mm-hmm. But of course, for Jnani, there's one abiding who is present, experientially present, to this painful ride that is not riding. Right? It's like the one bird that's sitting home in the nest, remember? One bird sitting home happily in the nest and the other is flittering all about. You know, so you look at it like that in terms of your internal experience. There's the me who's not flittering about at all. I am simply sitting. I am fine. There's nothing that can happen to me. I'm stable and whole and complete. And then there's whatever's flittering around. So both things are there. For the jnani, both are equally recognizable, equally present. For the ajnani, they're superimposition. One is taken to be the other, so you as though have only one thing there. So there's no home. Right? For the jnani, there's a constant home. But when there's that constant home there, the flittering crazy bird, you know, is not crazy anymore because it has found its home. It's recognized its home, and so now it has a home too. But otherwise, just the Atma has a home, and the crazy mind doesn't. Right? Because it's only identified itself with the Atma, and it's crazy. It's going, you know, it's unstable. By nature, it's unstable. But what about when it realizes that it has a stable home? The truth of it is stable, absolutely stable. And Ananda. It is, in fact, what it seeks. And so then the crazy bird of the mind is freed, in a sense. Not that the mind is ever free. The mind is Maya. But it knows its truth is free. Itself is free. And so the ahankara really moves over from the mind to the self. You know, the Maya ahankara correctly identifies the self, which is true. Okay? It correctly, the mithya ahankara labels the satyam atma, the atma which is true. And it labels it saying, ah, I am the satyam atma, not the mithya mind. Okay? It sees it. Okay? And it says, even this ahankara is mithya, but the self of the ahankara is satyam. Right? The ahankara is mithya in that it's part of duality. It's just a thought. But that thought has jnana. It's a way to the satyam mind, the satyam self. Right? And so it's free in that way. Right? So here, they're only talking about these two states. So we've got in the first verse, we have the jagrat, which is the waking. Now the swapna, which is the dream, and now the shushupti, which is the deep sleep. And that's all we're going to do. We'll do the kind of Mahavakya. The next section is the Mahavakya.
Oh, good.
That brings all of this together. Okay. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.